Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I would like to begin our program today with an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 29th of January. The title of the article is Star Employees Escape Return to Work Mandates. And this article was written for the Wall Street Journal by Ray A. Smith. High performers and those with unique skills get perks in new hybrid hierarchy. Millions of workers across the country are being given return to work marching orders, but the roles are different for stars and top performers. Companies including Amazon.com, AT&T, and JPMorgan Chase have called their workers back to the offices 5 days each week recently, with Boost citing a need for collaboration and connection. Nearly 80% of 400 CEOs in a 2024 KPMG survey said that they expect employees to be in their offices full time within the next 3 years. Employees with unique skills and talents, however, are often being offered more flexibility than their peers are, labor researchers and recruiters are saying. The privileges get extended to those with a proven record of exceeding performance quotas or those whose brains and personal brands make them a hot target for competitors to poach. Sometimes it is also about seniority. In other cases, your work-from-home status depends on what team you're on. Work-from-home days, once arranged with an empathetic boss, have now become a privilege. It's a little bit more selective, more quote-unquote perky, said Ron Porter, a senior partner at organizational consulting firm Korn Ferry, which referred to the phenomenon as the new hybrid hierarchy in a recent report. In certain roles, you could see it as that's what it took to get them, or that's what it took to retain them. Still, the tiered return to office policy can lead to tensions about fairness among the peers, as well as between managers and their staff. Hadeja Alford, who works in sales for an advertising company in California, is allowed to remain hybrid while managers have had to start going into the office 5 days each week. Work from anywhere is important for her as a mom of four, she said, allowing her to easily schedule her children's doctor's appointments or help with school projects. From the manager's perspective, I think they're looking at it like, okay, if we can do it, you can do it too. So there's that resentment, she said. Many employees are frustrated these days about why some of their colleagues don't have to comply with RTO, return to office, mandates. Ryan Essenberg, who is a business development director in Mountain View, California, was not happy when a former employer moved from hybrid to 5 days a week in the office last year, with the exception being those who exceeded their performance quotas. He said some colleagues who did not seek the quotas went into the company's office every day and were routinely treated like children and micromanaged, he said. Essenberg parted ways with that company shortly after, and he continues to work for other hybrid opportunities. I believe that hybrid is the most optimal, productive, and beneficial form of work, regardless of seniority, title, or quotas, he said. At one previous employer, everyone from the chief executive to the rank and file went into the office on the same day every week. It worked great there. There was no tension. After AT&T began implementing mandated in-office days for management employees in 2023, Chris Pileski, a former lead channel manager at that company, said he found that the policy was inconsistent with many cases of favoritism. Certain employees were allowed to work remotely more often than others. Some people were correctly promoted by their classification. That is understandable. But there were a lot of teacher's pets, so to call, in situations as well, he said. An AT&T spokesperson said business units have some flexibility to determine a workplace model that best serves customers, and that some employees will continue to work remotely or on a hybrid schedule. Pileski, who worked at AT&T for 26 years, lost his job last year after he could not relocate from Abington, Maryland to a Dallas hub in order to comply with the company's mandate. And now he works in a chief sales and marketing role at a 3D printing business in Newark, Delaware. His salary is 40% lower than it was at AT&T, but he had a hybrid schedule that included one remote day. So, who gets to work from home? 5 days a week in the office was the norm for most office workers until the pandemic forced millions to work from their homes. Many workers discovered a new work-life balance with the flexibility to start preparing dinner earlier while still getting some work done. As offices started reopening in 2021, many employers stayed remote or settled on a hybrid schedule of 2 or 3 days in the office. When some workers still wouldn't come in, bosses started putting their foot down, mandating, and even tracking attendance. Today, 1 out of 10 working professionals in the U.S. who want to change jobs cited a desire for hybrid or remote work that their current company would not allow, according to a new LinkedIn survey. Fields where the share of hybrid job listings increased the most in 2024 include technology, finance, and insurance, and nonprofits, according to jobs platform ZipRecruiter. Overall, the increase in job listings for the hybrid roles slowed down in 2024, according to jobs site Indeed. Remote workers are more likely to be white, older, and wealthier, according to new Census Bureau data. Seemingly, each week, more companies now are pivoting back to making sure that everyone comes back into the office. They believe in-person time deals leads to better communication, to camaraderie, and to productivity. At WPP, which is an advertising and marketing services group, Chief Executive Mark Reed announced in a New Year's memo to start that most employees would be required to spend an average of 4 days a week in the office. The policy applies to every employee at that company, including Reed, he said, with some exceptions that would have to be agreed upon with a manager. This is not about asking our junior staff to do something that our most senior staff are not going to do, he said. In fact, we're rolling this out with our most senior people now, at the beginning of the year, before the whole organization in April. The following article also appeared in the January 29th issue of the Wall Street Journal, Buyouts Offered to Federal Workers. This article was written for the journal by Natalie Andrews and Meredith McGraw. 8 months of pay is held out for those now working from home if they resign. From Washington. The White House gave federal workers a choice: return to the office full-time or resign and get paid for the next 8 months. In a Tuesday night email, the Office of Personnel Management told federal workers that they have until February 6th to decide how to proceed. If they step down, they will continue to receive all pay and benefits and will be exempt from in-person work requirements until September 30th. But the Trump administration made clear that even those government employees who stay on could still eventually lose their jobs as the president works to downsize the federal government. At this time, we cannot give you full assurance regarding the certainty of your position or agency, but should your position be eliminated altogether, you will then be treated with dignity and will be afforded the protections in place for such positions, the email says. The White House said it is considering relocating some government offices and downsizing agencies through restructuring, furloughs, and reclassifying employees so that they have fewer job promotions. White House officials estimated that the in-office requirement will prompt 5 to 10% of federal employees to quit, and they said it could lead to $100 billion in savings annually. Senator Tim Kaine, a Virginia Democrat, cautioned against taking the offer, though, saying that Trump could renege on the plan. If you accept that offer and resign, he'll stiff you just like he stiffed the contractors, he said, on the Senate floor, referencing people who have accused the Trump Organization of hiring them and not paying. He doesn't have any authority to do this. Do not be fooled by this guy. A recent Pew Research survey found the federal government employed just over 24 million people when the military and postal service are excluded. The program, which the White House calls deferred resignation, will be available to all full-time federal employees except for military personnel, the U.S. Postal Service, and positions related to immigration enforcement and national security, according to the administration. To step down, employees need to send an email to a human resources address and put resign in the subject line, according to OPM's instructions. If they don't want to work in the office and contribute to Make America Great Again, then they are free to choose a different line of work, and the Trump administration will provide a very generous payout of 8 months, said White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt. Officials at the State Department, the U.S. Agency for International Development, and others also were unclear if the exemption for national security staff applied to them. The email was not specific and left hundreds of diplomats and aid workers wondering if they could take the severance offer. It's so confusing, a State Department official has said. Most federal employees are already working in the office at least some of the time, according to the Nonpartisan Partnership for Public Service. The following article, written by Lindsay Ellis for the Journal, appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 16th of January. Even Harvard MBAs are struggling to score jobs. Landing a professional job in the U.S. has become so tough that even Harvard Business School says its MBAs cannot solely rely on the university's name to open doors for them anymore. 23% of job-seeking Harvard MBAs who graduated last spring were still looking for work 3 months after leaving campus. That share is up from 20% the previous year during a cooling white-collar labor market. The figure was 10% in 2022, according to the school. We're not immune to the difficulties of the job market, said Kristen Fitzpatrick, who oversees career development and alumni relations for HBS. Going to Harvard is not going to be a differentiator. You have to have the skills. Harvard is not the only elite business school where recent graduates seem to be stumbling on their way to the job market. More than a dozen top-tier MBA programs, including those at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School, Stanford's Graduate School of Business, and New York University's Stern School of Business, also had worse job placement successes last year than any other in recent memory. Most MBAs from top schools end up with good-paying jobs, and schools said that they have an edge in the white-collar job market. But the three-month figure is closely watched because it signals hiring demand for corporate climbers in high-wage fields, and it usually gives schools a statistic to woo young professionals into investing in a management degree. Ronil Dayora from Surat, India, received his MBA from the University of Virginia's top-ranked Darden School of Business last spring, aiming to change careers from manufacturing operations to technology. Dayora, who is 30 years old, said that he has applied to at least 1,000 jobs so far, and he attends networking meetups in San Francisco. But he does wonder if he was naive about changing industries. Graduates who need visas, sponsorship by employers, accepted jobs at lower rates than U.S. students did at several programs, school data shows. Ask me in 2 years, Dayora said, of whether his graduate degree was at all worth it. This year of 2024 MBA is still on the market months after graduation, more than doubled at most highly ranked business schools when compared with 2022, according to a Wall Street Journal analysis of school data. At some, including the University of Chicago's Booth School and Northwestern University's Kellogg School, the share of students still looking more than tripled. Staff have helped students to find jobs in the months after graduation, Chicago and Northwestern leaders said. Nobody gets left on the field, said Lisa Kirkpatrick, who is assistant dean for the Career Center at Kellogg, noting that while 13% of job-seeking MBA graduates did not have a job after 3 months, that figure fell to 8% at 5 months. One high-ranking program had more than 2024 graduates employed by fall than it did in 2023. Columbia Business School MBAs who land jobs tend to get sizable pay, with median-based starting salaries of about $175,000, school data show. Employers don't hire as many MBA grads during the school year, a tactic that was common 2 years ago. Now they recruit smaller numbers closer to graduation and afterward, according to staff at Columbia and the University of Michigan. In this environment, students need to engage with professors and alumni, not just the Career Center or recruiters, Susan Brennan said. She leads career development at MIT Sloan School of Management, where 22.8% of MBAs were hunting 3 months after graduation. Brennan said that when graduates who launch startups or return to past employers are factored in, the overall group of MBAs who have not accepted jobs is smaller. Amazon, Google, and Microsoft have reduced MBA recruiting, as have consulting firms, recent graduates, and business school staff said. McKinsey, for example, cut its MBA hires at Booth to 33, down from 71 the prior year, the school said. Google and Amazon spokespeople said that they continue to recruit MBAs, but the number of hires fluctuates with business needs. Microsoft said it has slightly cut back MBA hiring. Jenny Zenner, who is a senior director at UVA Durden's School Career Center, said that she is seeing less tech hiring across MBA programs. At Durden, 10% of the graduates had not accepted a job 3 months after graduation, up from 5% back in 2023. Many tech recruiters lost their jobs and dialed back their internship programs, fundamentally changing how they hire from universities, she said. Companies tell us we're not coming to campus anymore, Zenner said. The super selective environment is not a blip, but a new reality, HBS's Fitzpatrick said. I don't think it's going to change, she said. To help students and alumni, Harvard is testing an artificial intelligence tool that can compare job seekers' resumes with their preferred roles and recommend online classes to bridge their skill gaps. HBS is also offering students a new 4-day intensive class on the job search, focusing on soft skills such as networking and how to pitch your skill set. Newly minted MBAs still on the market said that they are watching their budgets and taking contract work. Even graduates who secure jobs have had their plans upended. Yvette Anguiano got a consulting offer from EY Parthenon after a summer internship while a student at Kellogg. Last September, she moved to Seattle for the job, only for her start date to be pushed back to June 2025. I was pretty devastated, she said. I had tried to do everything right. Anguiano is out of savings, and student loan payments are looming for her. The firm gave her a stipend of $35,000, far less than her starting salary, and she's looking for work to bridge the gap. EY Parthenon did not respond to requests for comment. Nikhil Srikumar graduated last spring from Duke University's Fuqua Business School, where 18% of job-seeking MBAs were still looking. He applied to about 500 jobs before a Duke alum referred him to Amazon for a senior program manager job. He starts this month. You constantly ask yourself, am I good enough? He said, referring to his protracted job hunt. I was so relieved. The title of the following article is You Cannot Blame DEI for Failures at Work Anymore. This article was taken from the journal January 21st. Corporate America's DEI retreat removes a barrier or may be an excuse for some work. This article was written for the journal by Callum Borchers. I hear from them all the time. Add one more to your list of aggrieved white males, a reader wrote to me recently. The man, a 64-year-old electrical engineer in Florida, said that a manager at work told him he'd been denied a promotion because the company needed to elevate more women and people of color. As a columnist who has written about diversity, equity, and inclusion, I am not surprised to receive emails from people who blame DEI for holding them back professionally. More than a third of Americans believe DEI in the workplace hurts white men, according to the Pew Research Center. Still, the earnestness of some messages is striking. One guy emailed me on Christmas morning with a tale of being passed over for diversity reasons. With Meta, McDonald's, Walmart, and other large companies pulling the plug on diversity initiatives, I wondered how these self-described DEI casualties are feeling. And so I recently spoke with the aggrieved engineer and seven others who contacted me with stories about doors allegedly being closed on them because they were the wrong race or gender. most feared for their jobs and insisted I not name them publicly. They generally believe they're more likely to get hired or promoted in an environment where Donald Trump is president. Robbie Starbucks' name and shame threats loom over corporate America, and Mark Zuckerberg heralds masculine energy on Joe Rogan's podcast. Their optimism is not unbridled, however. Some told me that they worry about a bro renaissance going too far and harming women and people of color. And a few are mulling an ego-rattling possibility. What if I've pinned my failures on diversity only to discover that the stumbling block is me? They say the retreat of corporate DEI reserve removes a barrier for them, or perhaps an excuse that they have used to rationalize life's losses. A 26-year-old chief of staff at a New York software startup suspects his college and career prospects were dimmed because he does not advance diversity goals as a straight white man. He remembers his high school guidance counselor telling him he wouldn't get into the Ivy League for this reason, and in subsequent years he has chalked up professional disappointments to the effects of DEI. And now he's considering whether diversity was a boogeyman. I'm sure there have been times that I attributed too much to DEI when I didn't get an opportunity, he says. Maybe I didn't come across well in an interview, and I could do more introspection. Softening the blow. Companies have become more diverse at the top since 2020, the year of George Floyd's murder at the hands of police. That year, 85.1% of executives at Standard & Poor's 500 companies were white, according to research from the University of North Carolina and Texas A&M University. In 2023, the share of white executives was 79.8%. That is still far from parity, but the percentage of white executives fell more in the 3 years after Floyd's death than it had in the previous 9 years. At the same time, the number of black executives in the Standard & Poor's 500 grew from 253 to 417, a nearly two-thirds increase, according to the North Carolina and Texas A&M study. White candidates for top positions, while hardly shut out, likely perceived the rapid change as a threat to their careers. Sometimes they were told that DEI had cost them, several recruiters and human resources professionals told me. That was not always the truth, however. Harvard sociologist Frank Dobbin, who has devoted much of his career to studying corporate diversity, says hiring managers sometimes let people down easy by suggesting that they are victims of demographics instead of telling them they weren't up to the job. When a woman is promoted, not a man was in the running, HR will often wink and say, "Maybe next time, guy," Dobbin says. Even when the woman is promoted because she is better qualified, it's a way for the manager to get out of having a difficult conversation. One executive recruiter told me providing honest feedback to unsuccessful job candidates is awkward and sometimes adversarial, so it is tempting to fudge the reason for the rejection. He offered a scenario. How do you tell someone they had body odor or were weird? Sorry, bad DEI strikes again. A lot of organizations thought that DEI was the way forward because it sounds nice, but corporations are not supposed to be the moral compass of the country, Villalonga says. This is all we have time for on Careers for today. Hope you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.